This meeting is now being recorded.
Welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the RPM subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call on the 16th of January, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you happen to be only on the audio bench, would you please let yourself be known now? Right, thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and thanks to all who have joined today. I'll just briefly run through the agenda, and once that is complete, I will turn things over to Martin Silva, who will be chairing the call today. And just as a reminder, Martin and Roger Carney are our co-chairs for this call, and Martin will lead today's call. So just to review the agenda, item one is the review of the agenda, the updates to statements of interest. Agenda item two is to continue the survey analysis. And item number three is any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? I'm not seeing any hands. I'm not seeing anything in the chat, so we'll leave that blank for now. Let me ask back to agenda item one if anybody has any updates to their statements of interest. I'm not seeing any hands or seeing anything in the chat. Then I'll move to agenda item two, and we're going to continue the survey analysis. Going back to questions one through three, but really just I think we're going to look at questions one and three and circle back to two, and Martin can confirm that, and then questions four and five. And I see Martin has his hand up, and I was going to turn things over to you in any case, Martin, so please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Julie. Hello. And Martin Silva for the record. Thanks, staff, for the work done and the work ahead, and thank you, Roger, for co-chairing and to the group for the trust. I would like to keep the call focused on the track we set ourselves. Roger and I agreed with staff we would share one call each. Nonetheless, I do invite Roger to intervene at any point as co-chair, since what we do in this call will affect what he does in the next one. And I do apologize beforehand for any mispronunciation. My English is not my language. First, I would like to clarify something on the draft agenda we have. The question two survey analysis has not yet been reviewed, and it will be done after question five, according to what we said in the previous call. Since the content is better answered after we discuss the other findings. We didn't finish question three last time. We should pick up from there, and unless someone
I apologize, but I just lost Martin, I think, and I see George Kirikos is asking sound. Yes, Martin, I believe we have lost you. Michelle, can you? Okay, actually, it looks like we have lost Martin entirely. So please all bear with us as we try to get Martin back.
Wait, no, not entirely. I'm here.
Well, good. You have dropped from the Adobe Connect room. Oh, there. I see you on phone. Okay, that's good.
Okay, I can continue on phone while I get back to the Adobe Connect.
Thank you. Your phone is much more reliable, and I can let you know if people have their hands up. I think you were a little bit quiet for some of, at least you were for me, your volume for what you were previously saying. I don't know if you want to kind of go back just a little bit now that you
sound
a little louder.
Loud. What about now?
So I think you were running through the analysis and you were suggesting that we start with question three that we had not completed discussion on.
Sure. Can you hear me now well?
Now well?
Yes.
Okay, So I was saying, yes, that we didn't finish question three, so we should pick up from there. Unless someone thinks otherwise, I would like to propose we leave the updates for extra comments, the questions analysis for when we finished with all the questions. So we don't go back and forth in every call, which can be disruptive and confusing for some. Are any objections to this? I don't see any hands up. Okay, I continue.
Martin, I apologize. Yes. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. George Kirikos has his hand up.
Oh, I didn't slide. Go, George.
Yeah, George Kirikos here. Can you repeat what you just proposed? Because I didn't quite understand what you were actually proposing.
Yes. I propose we go ahead with question three that we didn't finish, and that we leave the updates of the question one in this case for when we finish all the questions, instead of going now.
That's fine, thanks.
Okay. Before we go into question three, I would like to remember all that right now we are not going to answer the questions themselves, nor anticipating or drafting recommendations. We are setting this call to identify which data in the survey is relevant to the charter's questions and why. So we should do an extra effort to focus on that narrow task, even when it's good to anticipate thoughts, ideas, or intuitions. When we finish identifying the relevant data in the survey, then we will go to analyze all the other data available, and only later debate on concrete proposals supported by data we pointed out earlier. I do ask staff, and let me know, Julie, if this is possible, that we link or pass the notes or the report of this meeting in the document where we have the comments. So when we go back later to the text comments, we also have the oral debate we are giving here. Is that a possibility, Julie?
Thank you very much, Martin. This is Julie Hedlund for staff. Generally, what we try to do is to summarize the notes from the call and the points that are raised and to in the document. They're also posted on the wiki. But keep in mind that probably more definitively, and when we roll up all of these discussions into the summary document, we'll be linking to the transcript as well, because the transcript, of course, is a much fuller and more accurate reflection of these conversations.
Oh, perfect. Thank you for that. Griffin, yes, of course, ultimately we are set to do that, but we have an order to all things, and if we don't focus on that order, we are never going to go through these questions. Okay, instead of reading each comment and try to go back and forth from the sub-questions we have, I would like if the people that wrote the comments can summarize what they found in each sub-question. So I could read the first one, question 3A. We started with this one. Does the trademark claims notice to the main named applicant meet its intended purpose? A1. If not, is it intimidating, hard to understand, or otherwise inadequate? If inadequate, how can it be improved? What have the members of the subgroup find in this? What data? Do any of you want to start, George, Racine, Kathy, Rebecca? I know you have comments on that. George, go ahead.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. Can I just clarify, as I have in the chat, we should be looking at the new text that's been added, and that is the text that's in green, and that starts from page 8 from Griffin Barnett. Thank you very much, and sorry again for. Okay, I'm seeing that I'm corrected. So let me apologize for my interjection. Kathy is noting that we've never actually reviewed the old text. So apologies for that. And let me go back to George Kirikos, and again, apologies for interrupting.
George Kirikos again for the transcript. I thought we actually did start to go through this last time, but on page 1, 2, and 2, I pulled out the cells from the large spreadsheet, which seemed to indicate there was confusion. That was E23 and F23 of the actual potential registrants tab, and E18 and F18. And the registry and registrars tab seems to reinforce that. And I think that was those were the most relevant examples from the document that had data relevant to that sub question. I did want to make a general comment though that when we look at this data, we should try to make a distinction between the survey that was surveying opinion versus surveying facts, because all the different stakeholders seem to have various opinions on various questions. But the more useful data is the one that's actually measuring facts. Just to give an example, a fact would be something like, I spent a certain $100 or $200 or whatever on a certain domain name. That's a factual statement. Whereas some of the opinion questions, I think, are less useful. Like, do you want more brand protection? All the trademark owners would say, yes, yes, yes. give me more. Other people might say, no, we want less. And that's kind of like less useful. It's interesting in the way we have a survey greater than the members that are participating in this PDP and working group, but it's kind of, I think, less important in the grand scheme of things. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Kathy Kleiman asked, Martin, how long would you like us to talk? Ideally, I would love to have you speak only for 2 minutes, but of course that depends on the amount of data you have found. For instance, I'm reading George's comments, and he said that the least he found data on the actual potential registrant stuff for these remarks. Maybe Kathy or Griffin wants to comment on the data they found on this A1. Griffin, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks. This is Griffin Barnett for the record. I'm happy to try and quickly summarize the comments that I added, and I'll try and stick to specifically what, is tied directly to the survey data, which, I tried to do generally, of course. There is some, additional kind of commenting based on some interpretations of the data as well. But just to try and quickly summarize, basically, I think the data suggested that there was fairly little time spent by most registrants or prospective registrants in actually reviewing the claims notices. I would note that there were some answers indicating that people were, quote, worried or, quote, intimidated by the claims notice, which I interpreted to mean sort of, they had trouble understanding what it meant or what its implications were. But at the same time, the data showed that I think it was 83% of the prospective registrants continued with the registration in spite of receiving the claims notice. So I think from that we can, we can interpret that to mean that even if people kind of had trouble understanding or didn't spend a lot of time reviewing the claims notices, they weren't necessarily deterred from proceeding with the registration in many cases. In addition, I was looking at what were the reasons why people indicated that they abandoned their registration. But I would note that, receiving the claims notice was not listed as a top reason why some people abandoned the registration. I think the data said that things like pricing or just general issues with the registration process were more were given more as more likely reasons. And one other interesting piece of data, and I think this is something that Rebecca mentioned last time, was, a fairly high number of people indicated confidence in their ability to actually understand the notice, which seems to cut against, you know, other data suggesting that people, you know, may not have actually understood the implications or were intimidated or worried by the notices. So that's sort of, you know, a summary of what the data said to me. And then, you know, I'm happy to stop there. I did insert some potential conclusions that I drew from those kind of various threads of data. But I understand that's not necessarily where we want to go at this point. So I guess I'll stop there.
Okay, Griffin, thank you very much. Of course, I know some of the comments all of you made are general in the sense that you quote data that could answer to the whole question. And that's okay, that's fine. But I, of course, have to ask if you have identified something more specifically, because that, of course, is even better. So I just, if it's general, just say this actually is for the whole question. But if you have identified something that is specifically for question 3A3, that it's good to know that you have pointed out specifically that. I see Kathy is next on the queue. Kathy?
Hi, Kathy Kleiman, of course, speaking as a member of the sub-team. Martin, I just want to let you know I can hear you perfectly now, which is great. Griffin, you probably saw in the chat, we were having trouble hearing you. So it's really good you were talking so slowly because at least it seemed to get through in the delay. But I think I caught most of what you said, but if I didn't, you know, thanks for repeating. So, Martin, two questions. 3A, I added a number of responses to 3A, little 1, 2, and 3, and I'm going to combine them because I actually think we're in agreement. So, 1, is the notice intimidating, hard to understand, or otherwise inadequate? Yes. For the cohort of people, as you know, we've talked often that two groups of people responded. One group was the group the analysis group reached out to. The other group was the group ICANN reached out to, which included a lot of trademark owners. Because they tell you we're experts in trademark. It's in the survey. That's not your normal registrant group. So the normal registrant group didn't understand the notice. You know, that's my problem and Paul McGrady's problem because we drafted it, but they didn't understand it. To 2, they didn't understand the scope and particularly the limitations of trademark owners' protections. They're confused. They tell us they're confused. They're turning back. Even in legal cases, they're turning back in lots of numbers. Cases that in the survey were designed to be kind of clearly legal cases, they're not going forward. But also we know that the translations aren't taking place, but at least half of the registrars that responded, and that's the registrars who responded, weren't taking place. The translations aren't taking place. So of course, anybody who doesn't speak English as a first language isn't going to get it. And all the IDNs, all the internationalized domain names, no one's going to understand an English claims notice. But I wanted to read what Griffin said, and I'm just going to read it because I think we're in agreement, so I'm not sure how much we have to go in different directions. Griffin wrote, ultimately the wording of the claims notice could likely be improved to improve its effectiveness, comma, the notice delivered in additional translations in multiple languages, comma, and mechanisms put into place to ensure potential registrants confronted with a claims notice actually read the entire notice before choosing whether to proceed with registration or not. I think we're going to talk in B about timing of the notice, but I think we're in agreement, a clearer notice and definitely translation. So I think that gets us through a lot of 3A. Thanks.
Okay, Kathy, thank you very much. I think the next one is Michael.
Well, sorry, I took my hand down.
Oh, okay. I see Rebecca typed on the chat. It's probably simpler for me to put the notes in here because they are similar to Kathy. Intimidating is not just, I didn't understand it, abandonment rates as well as correct answers. About the meaning of the notice differed notably between the ICANN group of the experts and the non-ICANN panel, so there is a clear effect on non-experts. It's not communicating well to the people without prior trademark experience. And it seems you already are commenting on translation, which would be 3A3. Do you think that what you have exposed already covers 3A, or do you think you have something more specific to point toward 3A1, 3A2, or 3A3? Griffin has his hands up. Griffin, floor is yours.
Sorry, old hand, taking it down.
Okay. Martin Silva, for the record, do you guys have anything to add on question 3A in general? Or any specific pinpoint data you could tell us about a sub-question? Okay. It seems we are in agreement. Let's move to 3B then. 3D, should claim notifications only be sent to registrants who complete domain name registrations as opposed to those who are attempting to register domain names that are matched to entries in the trademark clearinghouse? Do any of the subgroups have anything to comment on this? Any specific data that points out to problems of doing this? George, you have your hand up?
Yeah, George Gricos is here. For that question, there was very limited data. I found some data on the registry and registrars tab that talked about, you know, issues of implementation, but it didn't really discuss the distinction between those two possible implementations. It just talked about general problems with implementation. Then also on cell F56, there was an overwhelming percentage of trademark holders that do want the notice sent, but that's obviously as I was talking in the chat room, it's a partisan kind of desire from them when it doesn't cost them anything to say that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, George. I see Kathy is next on the line. Kathy?
Can you hear me, Martin? And are we on 3D now?
Unless someone has any specific comments on 3A, we are not in 3B.
Okay. So on 3B, I entered, I looked at the tabs, and what we're seeing from the registrars, and my tab might not have, I think G72 is probably a registrar registry tab. So registrars are having trouble with the claims notice and the whole process of pre-registration of domain names prior to general availability, which is a big service that they offer. As you guys know, you can't actually pre-register a domain name. What you can do is queue up a whole bunch of people and then order for people who have who want a domain name. And the moment general availability opens, midnight or 12:01 on the night it opens, a program runs and registers all the domain names that are available in the order that they're in. So GoDaddy and Minds and Machines might be hitting the registry at the same time at 12:01 trying to get their pre-registered names in. I've done this for clients. And it works really well. But in this case, what they're saying is, and I was hoping maybe Roger could help us understand the technical side of this. What they're saying is it's resulting in a very poor customer experience. And what I don't understand is, and I actually put these data answers into the table, one registrar says that we remove the rotation of the claim token every 48 hours, and that token is only updated when the claim is changed. Another says claim keys expire quickly. Sometimes the registry don't deliver claim keys in a reliable manner, a little challenging. And others note, like, real frustration for their customers. So on the technical side, I'd like to understand more what's happening, what's expiring, and what's causing the customer who's first, but then a customer who's second for the same domain name. And if the second customer responds to the trademark claims notice faster, they seem to get the domain. Can somebody help us understand what's happening technically? Because it seems like there's a real problem out there, and one that might be solved by looking at the trademark notice later rather than earlier. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kat. This is Martin for the record. Rebecca, if it's okay with you, I know you're debating on the chat as well. Can I put Roger Carney first so he can answer to Kathy Kleiner's question? Roger?
Hi, this is Roger. Just speaking as a registrar, I think Kathy kind of teed that up really well, actually, in that one of the problems of what happened during implementation, and we never found policy to back this up, but during implementation, the trademark clearinghouse decided that they would expire claim ID every 48 hours. So when registrars are registering names 6 months before it even opens up for general availability, they present the trademark claim to the registrant. They accept it, but then it's only valid for 48 hours. So within 48 hours of GA actually opening, what GoDaddy did was, you know, they contacted the customers and said, hey, you have to accept the claim again because, you know, it expired. And so there was a lot of customers that actually lost out because, again, you know, in the last 48 hours before, that's why they registered it 6 months early, was not to be hurried at the end. But then they were hurried at the end if, you know, a claim notice was for that domain name. So I think the implementation got messed up somewhere, that this 48-hour window caused a lot of problems, and a lot of people did not get the domains they requested. Others did. And as Kathy pointed out, if this was presented later, that would solve that. Also, you know, other ideas were if the claim ID only expired if it was changed, that would also do it. I think there were several ways around this, but that was the main problem early on, is a lot of registrants didn't get the names they wanted just because they had such a small window to try to execute it. If anybody has any questions, let me know and I can answer. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Roger. Martin, for the record, Rebecca.
That's for the record. So, you know, I think I said most of what I wanted to. I do think pervasive confusion, as mentioned in the chat, is actually a perfectly good description. When you have, 38% of people in a group choosing each one, you know, of the wrong answers. So, you know, that's actually more than 38% of the people are wrong about what something means. That's pretty bad. More to the point, I think, in terms of the timing of the notice, I think if you believe that the notice is something that ultimately we want people to take seriously, it's not a great idea to say, well, you know, they can look at it in 90 seconds and decide whether to move on, right? So, I think if the problem is, in part, that people aren't paying a lot of attention because they want to finish a process that they have started, they have obligation to the other people in the business that they thought, like, they were going to do this, or there's some technical issue, then we really should think about sending the notice later when they could think about it. And there is in the data, there are people who say, I really wanted to get it done. I highlighted the one response that very specifically said, if I don't complete it, I could lose the domain name. I think we need to think about that. Now, I don't think I think we need feedback about this, but I think it is pretty clear that the position is something that logically contributes. And we have some data from people who say, you know, I really wanted to get through this, to lack of understanding or lack of attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Martin, so for the record, I have also Philip Corbin on the queue. Philip?
Yeah, thank you, Martin. And this is comments made in a personal capacity, not as co-chair of the full working group. Look, you know, I reviewed, I didn't fill out the form. I reviewed the answers to the survey. I read the comments that were put in by other members of the sub-team. I think we all know, despite the flaws in the data, that the trademark claims notice probably does deter some intentionally infringing registrations, but not all. There are simply some actors who know exactly what they're doing and are not going to be deterred. It probably deter some registrations that wouldn't be infringing by people who just are spooked by the notice. And I think there's general agreement that the language can be improved, and that I would think it's likely that the full working group will recommend that the language would be revised to be clearer. So far as advising people of their legal rights, there's only so far the notice can go on the complexities of trademark law, and I can't be in the business of giving conclusive legal advice. People with concerns are going to have to consult an attorney for a more informed answer specific to the exact domain name they intend to register. And finally, on the timing, I would ask Roger, and I can check with my own people. I'm not an expert on the technical aspects of the domain registration system. Yes, it might deter fewer infringing registrations if the registrant can go forward and complete the registration and then consult with a legal expert and decide whether they want to keep it, but will that work for contracted parties? Once the registration is complete, a payment is made. There's a fairly quick forwarding of payment from the registrar to the registry and all of that. And I would think it's, though I defer to experts from on this matter, that it'll be both difficult and expensive to back out of the transaction once it's been complete, but we ought to know more of the details on that. Those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Philip. I have Michael Graham on the queue. Michael?
Oh, hi. Thanks, Martin. Michael Graham for the record. Just a couple things. One, I think Phil really, I agree with the comments that he just made. I think they're well taken and help us move forward. I'm concerned there's discussion of whether delaying notice would be appropriate, but to do so would defeat the purpose of the notice, so I think it's contrary. If we want to go back and determine that there's a different purpose in the notice, that's one thing, but in terms of deterring bad faith registration or registration process of a domain name which inadvertently conflicts with a trademark, I can't see that delaying that notice would be positive in affecting that. And further, there's really no data that doing so, that delaying that notice would have a positive effect. Thanks.
Martin, did we lose you? Is Martin still on the call?
There doesn't appear to be.
Ah, there we are.
Should I go ahead, Julie?
Yes, evidently we did lose Martin. And Michael, your hand is still up. Is that, did you mean to take your hand down?
I'm just slow at taking it down. Thank you.
Thank you. Just wanted to check. Kathy Kleiman, please.
Great. Thanks, Julie. Hey, everybody. So I only heard part of what Michael said. Hi, Martin. We can hear you.
Oh, sorry. I'm back.
Okay. Should I go ahead? Okay.
Yes, please.
So, Michael, I apologize. I only heard part of what you said because it was going in and out, so I apologize because I feel like you listened carefully. Yeah. So we're asking the question because the question's here. It's 3B. Should claims notices only be sent to registrants who complete domain name registration? Rather than debating the answer, what I think may be incontestable is that the data says yes, the registrars have told us there's a problem. And also the confusion level of ordinary registrants tells us there's a problem standing on one foot reading a legal notice. People are used to click-throughs. They're not, you know, how much time do we spend on terms of use? They're used to click-throughs, and this is something they really need to pay attention to. In 2009, we did not have the precedent that we have now, which is that in 2013, the 2013 RAA made registrants verify their email address or hopefully I'll be clear where I'm speaking here, their email address or their phone number. And so what you do is, you know, as all of you know, because we've all done it, we register the domain name, we pay for it, it goes through, and then we get the follow-up notice at a time when we can review it, not standing on one foot, but when we can view it in the middle of the night or whenever we do our administrative emails. We then verify whether our email or phone is correct and send it off. And that finishes kind of the initial registration process. If we included the trademark claims notice on that type of cycle, there's precedent, and precedent we didn't even know or consider in 2009, so there is precedent now. But what I'd like to suggest is not that we argue the answer, but we say that there is some data showing that there's problems, both at the registrar level and the registered level, and that we then move it forward to look at what other data said. Volker talked to us as well about a year and a half ago about this as a registrar. So let's move it forward to figure out whether there's an operational fix or a draft policy recommendation. But I think we do have some data on this. Thanks. Sorry for talking so long.
Okay, Kathy. Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Martin Silva for the record. Susan is also on the queue, Susan.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, George has sort of addressed what I was going to say in the chat. So, you know, I was just going to flag up the domain tasting issue, which, you know, was considered a real gaming issue in the past, and processes were put in place for that. And so this idea that you might be registering and then dropping names later was proved to be really problematic and moved away from. So we shouldn't be starting to try to re-implement a process that effectively recreates domain tasting. And then just to reiterate again, you know, yes, okay, you know, some problems have been identified by registrars in terms of, you know, where they want to do pre-registration, but the fact remains that those registrants who wanted to register are taking a bit of a punt, you know, sometimes many months before they're entitled to register on whether the name is still going to be available for them when it comes available. You know, in the meantime, there's a whole period of time when other people could be registering that name. So they haven't registered it. They aren't entitled to register it. You know, if registrars want to offer that service and you know, give registrants a gamble, well, then great. But we shouldn't be trying to fix that problem when that's not a domain name registration. We should be addressing the fact that these notices need to be delivered before the name gets registered, not before someone thinks they might like it in 6 months' time.
Thank you, Susan. Roger is on the queue. Go, Roger.
Roger again. I just kind of wanted to respond to that, and I'm not sure that, you know, that was a good idea of a post one, but I think there's other solutions to this problem, but, you know, still provide it pre-registration or pre-registration. But if the claim doesn't change, why should it expire? Claim notice isn't changing at all, and the registrant accepted it 6 months ago, and there's no difference to it. Why make them accept it again? Again, I think it was just an implementation problem. That should be sorted out so that it doesn't cause problems with registrations in the future. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Roger. Do we have anyone else that wants to comment on 3D? Or any general comments on this review of the question 3, the surveys 2? Yeah, I see this sort of activity in the chat, so I will, of course, ask staff to take special look into the chat when doing the notes, and invite anyone in the chat if they want to come to the meet. If not, we can go forward to question 4. I have Kathy Kleinman. Thank you, Kathy.
Hi, Martin. Yeah, this is Kathy, and one of the questions I have is how do we summarize 3B? And I know we're not really supposed to collect more data going forward, but Rogers raised a really good question, and we don't even know. It's probably IBM that we need to ask about the tokens, but how do we summarize this? How do we collect the technical questions that we have, and, you know, how do we encapsulate it to move forward? What was my question? Our discussion is 3B. Thanks.
Julie is on the queue. Julie?
Yeah, thank you, Martin. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So as we all know, we do have the summary table where we will be, there's a column to capture the results of these discussions. So conclusions or deliberations, if there are recommendations, these can all be captured in that column, and that is something that staff can assist with in producing a draft for the co-chairs and the sub-team to review, whereby we would review the transcripts, the notes, but primarily transcripts, because that's a more accurate reflection of these discussions. And also the chat, and pull in the main points and summaries into that summary document. And then once that's, you know, reviewed and agreed to by the co-chairs and the sub-team, then that would then record these discussions, or reflect, I should say, should reflect these discussions.
Thank you very much, Julie. This is Martin Silva for the record. Does anyone else have any other common questions or is satisfied with Julie's answer? No? We're going to move to the question 4. Good. Let's move on. Claim Charter question 4. If it had matched requirements for trademark claims serving the intended purposes of a trademark claims RPM, in conduct-based analysis, recall the IDNs and Latin-based words which act with accents and homologs are currently not serviced or recognized by many registries. In the last case, we went through each two questions. In this case, I think for the nature of these questions, it could be more useful just to try to answer them all together. What do you think? Judy, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Christine.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine for the transcript. So I think that in this case, answering the questions altogether is going to run into a pretty slippery slope. The question highlighted in yellow, which is 4A, is the question for which we sought survey evidence. We weren't really able to seek survey evidence on the rest of the questions, B and its subparts, C, D and its subparts. So I think grouping them together is going to invite a massive, you know, sort of running down the slippery slope into solutions and ideas and proposals. So I propose that we discuss 4A. Maybe we can skim the rest to see if there's anything else that people have to add. But it looks like George maybe found something for B1, and so maybe there's something there, but I don't think it would be helpful to discuss them all in one big group. I think we discuss 4A and then maybe look at, you know, if people found stuff for the questions that were not part of the survey. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. Yes, I correct myself. I wanted to say that not every two questions are going to be B1, B2, B3, repeated before, but yes.
Why didn't you just file
A, 4B, 4C? I'm sorry for that.
Sure,
okay.
No,
what is the evidence under the decision?
Hotels.
And yes, George, do you recall? Yeah. I also have a bug on A. I don't know if you
charge for it.
Okay. That's a very normal topic of conversation for us. Okay, so what is the evidence of harm under the Kuzma system? Do any of the members that did the comments want to share their findings? We haven't reviewed any of these. I know one of the biggest questions, the biggest comments were from George and from Griffin. Any of you would like to summarize your inputs? Griffin, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks, Martin. This is Griffin Barnett. Hopefully you guys can hear me a little bit better now in terms of volume. So as I put in chat, I tend to agree with Christine that a lot of the subparts of this question are really, really for the recommendations and conclusions type discussion that I think is a bit premature for what we're trying to do right now. But I did try and kind of go through the survey data and pull out anything that I could that I thought might, be even, somewhat related to some of these sub questions and in particular, obviously the highlighted subpart A about evidence of harm. And really the only thing that I could sort of come up with is, and again, I'll be the first to admit it's a bit tenuous in terms of its actual linkage to the survey data, but, I took a look at some of the data concerning, how many people reported receiving a claims notice, and the statistic that we had there was that 53% of potential registrants reported receiving a claims notice, and 20% of potential registrants indicated they did not know anything about their country's trademark law. So from those kind of two discrete data points that we did have, my thought was understanding trademark law, the test for infringement is a likelihood of confusion test. And that doesn't necessarily require an identical match to the trademark for there to be actionable infringement. And so the thinking there was, what is the harm of having an exact match only system is that there might be registrants out there, prospective registrants out there who don't really understand that even if they register something that's not an identical match, there could still be potential legal consequences. And so that's kind of what I wanted to try and highlight in my input. But again, it's somewhat tenuous in terms of its direct relationship to what the survey questions were looking for, I think. But I did want to flag that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Griffin. Do remember we have to finish the call in 5 minutes and we still have 4 speakers. So we don't have to finish question 4 now, but try to get it short so that everyone can pitch in and we can continue the next time. Kathy, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, can you hear me, Martin, from where I am now with my cell phone?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, Griffin, I'm glad you mentioned that it's a little tenuous because I went back. I would have expected trademark owners to give us some answers on this, but I went back to the data you flagged in its register, and these are this is the very data that's showing that the registrants are confused, that they're backing out, that they don't understand the data. And so I don't think it's really I personally was surprised to see that data being cited for an expansion of the notices and the exact matching, because I don't think that's what registrants were asked, and I don't think that's what they responded to. And we don't have any data from the trademark owners. So I know we've I'll cut it off there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kazi. Next in queue is George.
George Kricos here. Yeah, I actually went through the data in the spreadsheet and did find a couple of examples that existed to help in this question. There was one, it was very limited though. One brand owner suggested that because their mark included the word co, as it short form for company, that they couldn't register because it wouldn't match the domains without the co. So, for example, if it was example co and they wanted the term example, then they couldn't get it because the actual trademark was example co. So that exact match worked to their disadvantage. And then that was F9 of the trademark and brand owners tab in one of the freeform comments. And then a couple of brand owners in cell F55 of that same tab suggested that the narrow scope of protection doesn't include confusingly similar names, and because notices are limited to exact matches, blah, 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 that they had to use third-party watches, like domain tools, I guess, and other services like that to monitor domain names. So that was considered a negative. And on cells F66 to F68, they suggested that some UDRP, URS, or litigation involve creative misspellings of the company's trademarks. That would be another example of lack of notice of a creative misspelling that causing damage to the trademark holder. And same thing for domain name disputes involving combinations of exact match plus some other terms. That was cells F70 to F73. So those were all from trademark and brand owners. On the other side, there was the cell A7 of the registry /Q29A tab, or hyphen Q29A tab, that had a freeform response suggesting that there were some IDN issues. So that was important to note, that some of the IDN exact match issues would have arisen due to that technical issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George and Kathy, for being very short on time. Rebecca, can I ask you something to be sure so we can finish on time? Rebecca?
Yes, Rebecca Tashnet. Sorry, I'll try and be quick. Yeah, I think the obvious points are that the lack of understanding shown, you know, by recipients of the notice about even an exact match makes it unlikely that a notice could successfully communicate the limits of an expanded system, especially when we're talking about algorithmically generated matches. People aren't spending a lot of time on these, and expanding the match is likely to make it even more ignorable if you get one every time because there's some, you know, you're within 2 degrees of separation of something, then we should expect it to become even more ineffective. That's it for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, and you're ending in 55, I'll give back the mic to Julie if she wants to grab up with some formality.
Thank you very much, Martin, and thank you all for joining us today. We do end now so that we can allow a little sunrise claims trademark at 5 after the hour. Thank you all for joining, and you'll see some notes and homework coming shortly later this afternoon. Thank you all. Bye-bye.